Welcome. Welcome to Conversations in Compassion, a podcast by Dignity Maine, a program of Agape, and made possible by the contributions to Agape. Thank you. This is a different podcast. Instead of interviews, we have conversations. This is my attempt to demonstrate examples of what I call compassionate conversation. Through these conversations, I hope to address the discord in our families, in our communities, and in ourselves. And finally, to focus on the greatest need of our time, the need for compassion.
Well, this is an amazing podcast. I'm walking away with first and foremost with this new concept of uncovery, and I love it. You can feel it when we're talking. This process of just feeling vulnerable in the world with others, and then there's another part of us that wants to isolate and is vulnerable to any kind of substance use, nicotine, tobacco. And there's a way in which companies and others get in there and feed off that vulnerability. I'd love to have you listen to this particular conversation because it's about shared passion as a world and as a community to be together and loving fully. Thank you. Thank you for doing this with me. And I'm really appreciative of your flexibility. And I've wanted to have this conversation because you have, for a decade or so, been thinking about this issue of tobacco and recovery and discovery. And so I'd just love to open it up, get what your thoughts are about all that now that you're here sitting here.
Thank you. Thanks, Stephen. I'm so glad to be here with you too. And when you said recovery and discovery, I also thought about the word uncovery, because that's some of what happens when we release things like tobacco and nicotine, right? We begin to uncover the truth of who we are. And sometimes some painful truths that are part of that too, right? While at the same time, it also begins to reveal our spirit, our light, our joy. And it's been about 33 and a half years that I've been involved in this.
What got you? What grabbed you to get involved in this uncovery? I love that word, you know, just kind of like moving things out of the way and start to uncover what's underneath it. And what moved you?
Well, my own struggle with it was a big part of that. I thought, I'm working in the field of mental health and the treatment of addiction, and I am having an incredibly difficult time stopping smoking. Why is it so hard? And I can only imagine how hard it is for people who don't have the skills and resources that I have. And is there something that I could do or learn that could make it easier for me and make it easier for other people too?
So you were kind of caught by that how difficult this addiction is.
Yeah.
This compulsion, and you really wanted to think, like, how can I help ease some of that?
Yes. Yeah, well said and summarized. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, that's kind of one of your superpowers, isn't it?
Yes.
I went to rehab after stopping smoking because I'd given up everything that gave me comfort, because everything that gave me comfort was somehow tied to my tobacco use and relationship. And so I let go of all these things. And then, so I was just raw. Mm. I was raw. And I was also working with incarcerated youth. I don't know if I had mentioned that to you before, but mm-hmm. I was working at what was then called the Maine Youth Center.
Maine Youth Center, right?
Mm-hmm. And my job was hard. And I was also living with a smoker. Mm-hmm. We used to smoke together until mm-hmm. I stopped. And it just didn't feel like there was any place to find comfort. And I started going to mutual support community meetings, mm-hmm. you know, in fellowship with other people who were also stopping smoking and other things, other challenges that they were taking on. And I just couldn't find enough cushion or comfort. I didn't know how to take care of myself ultimately. So I ended up going to rehab when I got really profoundly depressed. And I found in rehab, it gave me a chance to kind of step back. And that was where I had a chance to ask those questions. Like, wow, if it's this hard for me, what is it like for other people? Mm. And is there anything that I could do to make it easier for, you know, for all of us?
Yeah, you had been involved in a whole culture, relationship and culture of the Maine Youth Center. And just these people were smoking and around you all the time. And they didn't. They said they wanted to quit, but they couldn't. Mm-hmm. And so your compassion for them and yourself started to emerge of like, what do I do with this?
Yeah.
How do we soften this somehow so that people can actually uncover what's underneath and feel like they really are healthy, that they really are moving forward?
Yeah. Yes. And I, last year when I turned 66, I celebrated half a lifetime out of that cloud of smoke. So I had 33 years without, but I had 33 years with. And a friend of mine said, but you weren't a smoking baby. I said, I was a smoking baby. And in the time that I was born, it's not uncommon for moms to smoke, even when they were breastfeeding. And my mom was one of those moms. So she was breastfeeding and smoking at the same time. So I was a smoking baby. And then I grew up in a smoky house and in smoky cars. And then I started lighting my own when I was 12. And so you mentioned the community that I was working in. It extended beyond that, really, to just everybody around me. I was surrounded by smokers. And you know how common it was back then, too. It just was part of life. Whereas now, there's still quite a, as we know, quite a few people, not only here in Maine, but elsewhere, who are smoking and using nicotine as well and struggling to stop. You know, my interest isn't in the people who are out there saying, no, I enjoy this and I have no interest whatsoever in stopping. But I do think that most of us have some interest in stopping or at least having more control in the relationship, feeling less controlled by it and having more freedom.
There's something about when you started the word uncovery, you know, that there's a, there's almost an intimate relationship between nicotine and sort of medicating, you know, the life of growing up in a family where everything was smoke and it was a smoking baby. And for 33 years of your life, thought of most of that time, not even doing anything different because it was part of the culture.
Right. It was so interwoven in the culture, right? At 16, I had learned, right about the same, well, a little younger than Eva, probably, I had learned that the tobacco industry targeted youth. And I got really angry about that. And I tried to stop. And I couldn't make it a day. I felt so uncomfortable. The withdrawal was so surprising to me, but I was already a pack a day smoker. And so I didn't even try again until I was about late 20s. So more than a decade before I even tried again. I just committed to it and just said, you know, this is a relationship that I'm in. And it definitely had some, there was some of that feeling of being in an abusive relationship too. And so I've related when I've talked with people who are in relationships that where there was both love and abuse that was happening simultaneously, that kind of love-hate sort of feeling. Mm. It had that kind of quality to it where I knew it was stealing from me. Mm. It was taking my lunch money every day when I was in school. And it was also, it was making choices for me as opposed to me making choices for myself. And and that loss of agency, that loss of personal freedom was really, really pissed me off. So as a 16-year-old who did not like being told and controlled.
Right.
You know, right. I thought I'm going to assert my independence, but yeah, it didn't even last 24 hours. Mm. So,
you could feel this context of oppression where the tobacco company spends its time isolating a group of people and make it part of their culture. Mm. And that way they can possibly get them for the rest of their lives.
Yes.
And focus in on brands and focus in on flavor and all of that. Just really focusing in so that that young people themselves were thinking, I'm special because. Mm-hmm. And then they're in this incredible oppression.
Yes. Because the industry exploits people's vulnerabilities.
Right.
So whether it's teenagers and now even middle schoolers, whether it is the LGBTQ community, whether it's a Native community, and co-opting the Native relationship with tobacco and then getting their, you know, getting their in there. With military people, active duty service members, you know, they used to just give them cigarettes back in the day. Mm. And then still tobacco is sold at a lower price in that community. Mm. You know, I'm part of many of these communities too. Right. So I'm a veteran. I'm also part of the LGBTQ community. Mm. And then women as well. You know, women were certainly targeted with advertising and also people of color. Mm. And so if you're vulnerable, that became a way for the industry to get in. And I don't spend a lot of time around policy and around all of those. I did for a little while, got involved in policy and kind of lobbying and that kind of thing. But I'm more interested in that personal freedom and then how that affects all of us. Mm. You know, that if you and I and Eva and everyone has an opportunity to make choices for ourselves, and to choose our own best life, then the whole world is better.
Right.
Right.
When we can be our best selves, is what you're saying. When we can be those best selves, then everybody thrives.
Yes.
A whole community thrives.
Yes.
And then when people take addiction and move it towards marketing certain groups of people because they're vulnerable, then the vulnerability never changes that actually their way of marketing or their way of expressing themselves is truly about you will have power if you do this. Mm-hmm. And with particularly women, you will be able to take better care of your body in the sense it will make sure you're thinner. And in the particular groups of people were just targeted for whatever their vulnerability was.
Right.
And it was this belief that you would have power if you had. And there was a truth to it. Mm-hmm. Because it took away the pain.
Right. Yeah.
Which was the vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And you could feel it. And I do want to say that the one group you left off was the people who suffer with poverty.
Oh no, and I was sitting thinking about that and you're even reflecting things I haven't said out loud. So yes, because the poorest among us who have the least amount of discretionary disposable income end up spending their grocery money, their gas money, their if they even have a vehicle, if they, you know, the so yes. And taking the cheapest tobacco and then packaging it Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, they pay pennies for a pack of cigarettes. The tobacco industry does, but people who are buying it are spending a significant amount of their income to be able to afford this thing that, as you said, so accurately, takes away pain. Mm. It takes away joy too. And it takes away our cash. It's a tough bargain, isn't it?
Well, you know, what's amazing about it, and you know, just as I'm sitting here thinking about it, you know, there's, you know, 100,000 12-step meetings this week in the United States, and very little are talking about smoking.
Do you know that there is a whole fellowship dedicated to that that sprang to life during the pandemic?
Mm.
And of course, we won't mention it by name because we want to respect the anonymity that is part of the traditions.
Mm.
So, but for people to know that they can go and do a Google search and find multiple meetings in which they can sit in rooms with people from all over the world.
Mm.
I had this dream back in the day that I said to people, can you imagine if support for stopping smoking was as available as smoking, as available as tobacco? And now it's more available. Mm-hmm. You don't even need to leave the comfort or discomfort of your own home, right?
How beautiful.
To be able to get a meeting.
Mm.
It's thrilling.
Is thinking about the public is about 6% of the public, 6 to 8% of the public is struggling with alcohol addiction, and we're probably hovering around 19% of people struggling with vaping or nicotine, and it's a less of a topic.
Remarkably so, too, right? Because it always feels like there are bigger fish to fry. Because some things like the opioid crisis, like alcohol and the effects of alcoholism, those things show up in such a big way, whereas tobacco kind of gets tucked away a little, doesn't it? And there are a lot of people now who are using in closeted ways. I meet more and more closeted smokers and vapers. They don't tell their family, they don't tell their friends, or maybe just a few select friends that they get together with, and they keep it very, very quiet. But yeah, massage practitioners, estheticians, doctors, clergy, of course, teenagers too, you know, people who are using in ways that are very quiet and closet. It's not like, you know, I used to just be able to, we had a smoking area at my high school. So when I was a junior in high school, I turned to Eva here, you know, we were sitting in our smoking area between classes.
We had one too, but it was illegal and we loved it because of the illegality in the woods,
right.
The little spot that we had where we gathered up.
You were out in the woods.
Yes. Yeah, totally. It was much better than have a illegal spot.
Yeah.
felt much more attuned to my being.
I bet so.
Touched by, because I've also been, I've been in China where the addiction for nicotine is just rampant, beyond belief. The country opened itself up to a kind of a willingness to open up a little bit for the people instead of dictatorship. And with that came addiction, and mostly nicotine. Mm. And it was it's ravishing the country. And I'm thinking about, you know, how powerful this uncovery that you're talking about is, and how focused a corporation or a set of corporations could be on looking for the vulnerability and then targeting the vulnerability.
Yes. So, as you mentioned, that happened in China. And when I wrote my first book in 2009, in 2010, I got a an email from somebody in China who said, I want to start a group here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to get your book, though. So they could get tobacco, but they couldn't get a book about stopping. Mm-hmm. But somehow this woman had heard about it, and she said, I work in healthcare as well, and I'm a smoker, and I want to stop, and I know other people who want to stop or at least cut down. And how do I get your book? If I can't get on Amazon, I can't get on all of, they didn't have access to those resources.
Right.
And so I sent her a book, and then I sent her some information about how to start a group and put those in the mail to her. And it was so exciting to me when she contacted me to let me know she'd received them and they were starting a group. And so now they're that same in, influx isn't the word I want, but that same targeting is getting ready to happen, or is happening in Africa, throughout Africa too. And I was just reading about that in something from the World Health Organization. So, you know, you think, wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to go into those areas as the industry is going into those areas, not, you know, decades later, that's the way it's happened in China, but to go into those areas and be able to connect with people before the industry is really able to co-opt their attention and their dollars.
And their vulnerability.
Yes.
And in a way, that's the issue at hand that you're talking about, is that every group that we've talked about is, they have a vulnerability. And once the vulnerability is exploited in a way through this, through nicotine and tobacco, and just very, very powerful. And here you are 33 years later, finally having done the rehab and thought about all this and tried to help other people. And at the same time, some of it has not changed.
Right. And I just think that, you know, every time somebody contacts me and says, I've stopped, I feel so grateful and so much more free. It's thrilling. So even one person here or there who I'm able to reach and who connects, it is an absolute thrill. I know you, for you with the work that you do in MI, you understand that feeling as well of when something's landed, when you've made that connection. You were doing MI specific to tobacco for years. Right. How many years did you do that?
Well, many, many. I can't. I'm probably a couple of, at least a decade. Yes.
Okay.
What do we do with this? It is a very powerful target of vulnerability. And what do we do with this? Because it's almost as if, you know, if you're poor in this country, then you become a target for this. And it's very likely it's multi-generational. You just talked about being generational in the sense of your mom was smoking, you know. Your whole family was smoking. It was part of the culture. It was the neighborhood. It was everything. Where do we go?
Well, I think that you just said one of the key words, which is we. I've done all kinds of creative things around this individually. I mean, about wore myself out doing some of them, but had a lot of fun doing some too. So this little book that I have out now from 2021, Butt Kickers, 20 Ways to Leave Tobacco, it's a second edition of a book that I wrote in 2011. It's my fourth book. And so that's out there. And I did Nicotina, my giant drag-inspired cigarette butt character, and walked in the streets and talked to people and did pride parades and did health fairs with Native community and talked with military personnel. A lot of times, and also with healthcare, other people in healthcare too. But trying to do, and I could go on, you know, I've created art around this, made t-shirts that say kick butts, take names. I mean, I've just, there's been a lot of effort and energy on my part doing that solo. And what I recognize is that together we can do things that we can't do. I couldn't stop smoking by myself. Why do I think I can take on, you know, changing the way the world sees a response to tobacco singularly? I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of ridiculous to even think that, isn't it? So it's the we part. And I think that's where it changes. That's how it changes, is when you put heads together with other people who have similar but different perspectives, similar but different backgrounds, and but that shared passion, that shared drive around, we're going to do something about this. Actually, we already are. And so I don't have a specific answer to that question yet. I would say more will be revealed.
Well, I love a shared passion. You know, just a shared passion for not to do something about this issue, but to have a shared passion to create a community where uncovery becomes important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you feel excited about that too, because I think that's what it takes, is that shared passion, the shared enthusiasm, and the shared intent. Commitment to that, and that
people don't quit. Like a healthcare problem, they get a broken leg, they heal the leg. That actually, when it comes to something that arrives in your life because of vulnerability, that it takes a shared community.
Yes.
To uncover. And to be present with the vulnerability.
Yes. Because this isn't about quitting.
Right.
God, that word just gets right up under my skin. Can I just tell you, I'm not a quitter.
Right.
Neither are you. Nobody in this room is a quitter.
Right. Okay.
So, and to recognize that what this can be instead of quitting. Number one, you don't need to do it all at once. You don't need to do it suddenly. Learning and realizing that it could be something that you can do gradually and gently and respectfully and with the engagement with others too is exciting. So there's that. We don't need to set quit dates anymore unless they serve us. You know, there are lots of ways to do this that don't involve doing that, to do it with others. And for it to be I come back around to MI again. You don't come and learn MI and then check that box and go off with on your merry way. Ideally, what you do is you integrate it into your life, right?
Right.
You integrate it into your way of not only communicating with others, but how you communicate with yourself. And through that, your life starts to transform. And then you get to have not only more agency around that transformation, you got more cash in your pocket too. And let's face it, you know, that's part of what gives us the power and the opportunity to really do some pretty exciting change in our lives and in the world around us.
We have to sadly pause this conversation.
Oh my gosh, the time's gone so fast.
So I was thinking about this issue of shared passion, you know, and that you don't need a medication or a set to quit date unless that's, you know, what might work for you. But this process of coming together to be present for each other, there's a way in which we wouldn't tolerate a company or anything else sort of sneaking into our vulnerabilities, and sort of teaching us some subversive way that we're more powerful if we vape, or we're more powerful if we have a cigarette. Really appreciate that it's about health and healing and about uncovering your vulnerability.
And about real pleasure, not the BS pleasure that, you know, they put in the ads. It's about real pleasure, real connection.
And that we came here to do that and to love well.
Yes, we did.
And, you know, this uncovering, this passion is about what if we focused on each other?
Yeah.
With kindness and love and gentleness.
Yes.
Thank you.
And delight. And as we both know, we can be subversive without using tobacco or nicotine. We know
how to do that one. We certainly do. I really appreciate this conversation. And thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephen. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to today's conversation. And I hope you enjoyed it. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you find your podcasts. I'd like to give a heartfelt thanks to all the contributors to Agape Inc. for their support in making this podcast possible. If you care to join us, please go to dignitymaine.com to get involved. Thank you. Thank you again for being here, and take good care.